done this.
Have you ever noticed, if you've been in the temple this morning, how sometimes a 4-year-old's voice is louder than 100 other adult voices, and it can somehow just cut through the thickest din in a building or a place? And several years ago, a man returned from a business trip just when a huge thunderstorm hit. There was all kinds of noise, crashing thunder. There was bright, flashing,
severe lightning. He came into his bedroom at home at about 2 o'clock in the morning and found his two little children huddled up in bed with his wife, apparently scared from the storm. He was tired, but he reluctantly resigned himself to going to sleep in the guest room. The next day, he took his two children aside and explained to them that it was okay to have a sleep with mom when the storm was bad, but when he was expected home, he did not want them to sleep with mom. Now, they agreed that that was okay. After his next trip, a few weeks later, the same man's wife and children had agreed to go and pick him up at the airport. And the plane was late, and so a huge crowd of people had gathered waiting for the delayed passengers. And as the father entered the waiting area, his 4-year-old son saw him and came running to greet him. As he ran, he shouted in a great big voice, "Hi, Dad, I've got some good news." And as the father waved back to him, he shouted, "What's the good news?" The lad replied, "Well, nobody slept with mummy when you were away this time." As you can imagine, that very noisy airport became suddenly very quiet. And everybody was looking at the little boy and his dad. And then they began to do what you and I would do, scan the crowd looking for that poor, embarrassed mother somewhere in the crowd. I'm sure that the mother and father looked back on that event years later and had a great big laugh. But at the time, it was likely one of the most uncomfortable moments in their lives. The young boy, though, could not be blamed for causing the embarrassment. His statement to his father was entirely correct. And it was a matter of pride for the little boy who wanted to show that he had respected his father's wishes when the father was away. He was, in fact, doing the will of his father. The embarrassment comes when the rest of the world looks on that scene and has not got any idea of any of the backstory that went into it. They weren't privileged to know what had transpired the time before. And without that backstory, they would have jumped to conclusions about what in the world was going on in that household. Even from our perspective, we can laugh at the story because we've got all the facts. But if we had been in that terminal that day listening and observing this event, we might have been shocked by that little boy's declaration. The point is that families, all families in fact, have inside information. We all have in our families a context which is unknown to the rest of the world. Families have ways of speaking to each other, they have a history, they have specific goals and a myriad of interactions that no one save God himself knows about. The same goes without saying for Jesus. Jesus, when he was on this earth, was part of a family group. We forget that too often. He had a mother named Mary. He had an earthly father named Joseph. And most certainly by this point, he had other siblings in his family. In this family group, where they would have been just like the rest of us, they would have had inside information. They would have had stories that only they knew. They would have had history that only they knew. They would have had their little inside jokes. They would have had their tragedies and their struggles. All things that only they knew about as a family. And just like in our families, this shared experience was one of the things that bonded them together as a unit. There were also expectations that grew out of that shared experience. All of us who have even a cursory knowledge of family life realize what a tremendous investment children represent. Parents pour all kinds of resources into raising their offspring, and in fact, if we didn't, we'd probably be arrested and charged for neglect, wouldn't we? We've just gone through a few days with a good part of our society making every effort possible to indulge our children, and often at great expense. However, all this investment does carry with it a certain level of expectations. In response to this investment, parents expect obedience, respect, social interaction, and Lord willing, maybe some love. I've heard many a parent complain that their children simply do not give them any respect or the attention they deserve. I've heard that many times. One of the great tragedies that all of us hear about so frequently are how elderly parents are abandoned or neglected by their adult children. We all know stories of that. For those of you who will admit that you are fans of The Simpsons television show, a great example of this is how Homer treats his father, Grandpa Abe Simpson. Have you seen some of this? There are episodes which picture a poor old man being left behind and dumped casually at the senior's home. He has his reminiscences ignored. He has his gifts debased, as rare as they are. He's cheapened by his family, who responds to him poorly. And it seems like a funny portrayal, but we all realize that behind that funny portrayal, there lurks some truth. The cat's in the cradle. Remember that old song? In Jesus' day, there were very high expectations for children. Children were a defense against financial disaster as one grew older. In Jesus' day, children were expected to care for their aging parents. Actually, it was the eldest son who was most responsible, as the eldest son would often remain in the parental home as the heir apparent, raising his own children while at the same time caring for his parents. My Chinese friends back in Toronto told me that it's the same in all parts of the Orient, where the son was expected to care for his parents. The one-child policy, though, has upset that expectation considerably in China, as those with only a daughter fear that they're going to be abandoned as they get older. These daughters will be expected to help care for their in-laws, the parents of the man they marry. This responsibility of the oldest son is also portrayed with great deep emotion when Jesus is on the cross, isn't it? And he turns the care of his mother over to the disciple John. So with all this in mind, we approach our gospel lesson today. It's a story that we rarely contemplate. I don't know how many times you've heard a sermon on it. It is a story we frequently sort of just read or tell quickly, and then we move on to Jesus' adulthood. However, I think we need to pay very close attention to this story for a few reasons. First, Luke thought it was important enough to include it in his writing, so it must be significant. Second, with the exception of apocryphal writings, that is, other writings outside of the Bible, this is the only time we see Jesus between being an infant and being a grown man. Another reason we should pay attention is that this is the first recorded incident in which Jesus actually speaks. Now, although he certainly probably had lots to say growing up with his family and friends, these are the first words that we are privileged to read. Finally, this story is significant because it's a transition. It's a transition from the infant narrative to the narrative of Christ's ministry. And this is a transition we need to pay attention to. The story itself is quite straightforward. Mary and Joseph and Jesus and likely other children and relatives were making a pilgrimage to Jerusalem for the Passover. The scriptures tell us that this pilgrimage was a usual occurrence for the family. It was a regular thing. This was a time of celebration, of family, and of worship. It's not a whole lot unlike what we just experienced a few days ago. On the journey home, going back, Mary and Joseph hadn't seen Jesus. But they just assumed that he was traveling with other people in the same kinship group going back to the same hometown, back to Nazareth. It was a logical assumption. They probably thought Jesus was just hanging out with some other kids, maybe a cousin or a friend as they journeyed home. However, when evening approached and the group was now settling down, making camp for the night, Jesus was expected to attend the evening meal and he was a no-show. Mary and Joseph reacted like every parent I can imagine would. They became very anxious. They were scared. As they moved among all the relatives and friends that had camped in the same area, they began to search for him and their anxiety began to grow exponentially. I'm sure that all kinds of terrible thoughts raced through their minds, kind of like what we would experience. What if he was kidnapped? What if he was injured somewhere along the road and no one saw him? What if he offended a Roman soldier or a religious authority and had been arrested? Their imaginations would have just run rampant. Theories about where he was and what happened to him would be offered by relatives who also would become anxious and concerned. Now, if this had happened today, Mary and Joseph would have called the police right away. And we would have had an Amber Alert issued, wouldn't we? Well, Mary and Joseph did the only thing they could do, the only thing that seemed reasonable. They retraced their steps going back to Jerusalem. They checked out all the places they had been, all the things they had looked at, and for 3 days they searched for him. Side note, I think the 3 days are significant. Because remember, he spent 3 days in the tomb. After 3 days, they found him where? They found him in the temple. But he wasn't just hanging out there. Mary and Joseph found him in deep conversation, not just with anybody, but with religious leaders, learned men. Luke tells us that the religious teachers were utterly amazed with his understanding and his answers to their questions. Now, you can't blame the religious teachers for what happened here. The nature of Judaism at that time was that the whole culture was developed around rabbinical teaching. And young boys, not girls, I'm sorry, young boys were encouraged to seek out biblical knowledge whenever they could. In the Old Testament, we read how young Samuel was dedicated to the temple and to God. And traditionally, many a young boy or a young man spent time at the temple learning. There's a twist in the story, though, because in this case, it's clear that Jesus was the one teaching. He's 12 years old. The scolding that Mary gives Jesus is completely understandable. For 3 days, they've been all over the city, frantic, probably hadn't slept much. They've been anxious and fearful. They'd imagined the worst. They would have been relieved to find him that day, man. They would have been livid by what he put them through. Here's where family expectations come to a head. Mary and Joseph expected Jesus not to cause them worry. They expected him to respect them by staying close to them. If it were us, we might suggest that such behavior was what caused us to get some gray hair. I heard a delightful story several years ago. It seems delightful now. One of my former parishioners from Quebec, who's now in his 80s of all things, When he was a young boy, his mother took him on a shopping expedition to Eaton's department store in downtown Montreal. And the store was one of those old-fashioned department stores, you know, the ones where every level had a different department. Anyway, at one point, they were on an upper level of the department store, and the little boy wandered away from his mom. And he proceeded, I kid you not, to crawl out on a ledge out an open window of the department store. Fortunately, nothing happened. He climbed back in. It was terrifying. His mom always claimed that that stunt caused her to age significantly, even though she lived well into her 90s. But you know, life was hard enough for Mary and Joseph without having to spend 3 days searching for a wayward son. I should point out also that Jesus is not yet 13. And therefore, he hasn't had his bar mitzvah, and that means he's not considered an adult in Jewish society. He's still considered a child. Jesus answers to them again, his first recorded words in all of Scripture. At first, it seems like he's trying to dismiss their concerns as not very significant, but there's something else going on here. But why did you search, or why did you need to search? You should have known that I would be in my Father's house. Now, I don't know about your children, but if mine went missing, the church would be the last place I'd look for them. I don't know about yours. I mean, kids today seeking some freedom, they don't head to the church normally. They might go to the mall. They might go to the arcade. Do they still have those things? I don't know anymore. Or they go some other place for amusement. They might hang out in the park, but to the church. Jesus' words, which might seem somewhat cryptic at first, amount to him saying this: You of all people have the inside knowledge. Remember I talked about families and inside knowledge? You have the inside knowledge of who I am and what I'm all about. Where else would I be except in the place where God's actions and God's will is played out? I should also point out, it's interesting that Luke makes a point of recording these significant moments where? In the temple. The Gospel of Luke begins with Zechariah's vision in the temple. Simeon and Anna's prophecy about Jesus is where? In the temple. The birth narrative ends in today's passage where? In the temple. And then Luke ties it all together with Jesus' trial where? In the temple. Luke tells us that Mary and Joseph did not know what he meant by this comment, but it is Jesus' answer to putting Mary and Joseph through all of this. The passage ends with it saying that Jesus went home with them back to Nazareth, and he was obedient to them, growing both in height and in wisdom, and in favor with God and with man. It also says that Mary recorded all these things, storing them up in her heart, and it's possible, and most possible, that she was one of the sources for Luke when he recorded the Gospels, especially the birth narrative. This little and often overlooked stories is all about expectations. Actually, I should say it's a clash of expectations. I think even more significantly, it's a clash of identity. Luke introduces a very significant theme in his gospel record in this passage. It's the theme of Jesus' obedience to his heavenly Father, superseding any ties he has to his earthly family. This passage strongly hints at another incident all three of the gospels record, the Synoptic Gospels record in Mark 3, Matthew 12, and in Luke 8. In all three cases, the words of the passage are almost identical. It's a story that tells of the time when Mary and Jesus' brothers came to see him, but they couldn't get close to him. And word gets to Jesus that his family is outside the door of the house and can't get in to see him. And what does Jesus say? My mother and my brothers are all those who hear the message of God and obey it. I think Mary and his Jesus' brothers, even at this point, assumed that they would have access to Jesus whenever they wanted. They were family after all, weren't they? There was an expectation. Jesus is not being uncaring to his earthly family. He is simply reaffirming what he said when he was a boy, when he was 12 years old in the temple. The relationship that matters most to him is the one he has with God, his heavenly Father. In the language of the streets, Jesus is answering the question, who's your daddy? He's pointing heavenward. The story in Luke 2 is a foreshadow of Jesus accepting his destiny, his place in God's plan. It's also the moment when, as significant as Mary and Joseph's part in this great drama of the incarnation was, it now takes a back seat to the greater mission of Christ himself. The brief birth narratives, which we've just celebrated, are over. The festivities of light and decoration and feasting and gifts is to be set aside now for the harder journey, the journey to Calvary. Now we can understand if Mary and Joseph would have desired Jesus to stay being a little boy. Who among us hasn't expressed, boy, our kids grew up too fast? It's inevitable, isn't it? Their own children begin to make a life for themselves that doesn't focus on us anymore. Just like we have to, Mary and Joseph have to begin to let go, but it wasn't easy for them as these three records of the incident of his family's visit to Jesus indicate to us. They couldn't let go of him. As much as we want to, we cannot linger at the manger. It's not the end of the story. It's not even the point of the story. The hard stuff lies ahead of us. Are we ready for it? Are we prepared to become the mother, the brother, the sisters of Jesus by doing his will together? Because if we refuse to move on to the cross and what it represents, then Jesus' birth has no meaning at all. No meaning for us. It has no power at all. Just as Jesus grew in height and in wisdom, we too must let our faith grow tall and our hearts and our minds become filled with the wisdom of God.